Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, where we feature community conversations around South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel throughout our community and listen to local groups discuss what matters to them. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Ammon Swenson. Today's show features an episode of the Anchorage Museum's Chattermarks podcast. Chattermarks features everyday Alaskans, artists, big thinkers, and doers. In this live recording of the podcast, host Cody Liska sits down with Alaska skate and snowboard legends Jason Borgstead, Jesse Bertner, Micah Hollinger, and Andre Spinelli to discuss their roles shaping the local scene. This event was recorded at the Anchorage Museum on January 17th.
I think the key is finding something that you fail at, and there's really not much that maybe every sport person says this, but skateboarding, snowboarding, we chose this pursuit or fell in love with this pursuit of something that you fail at constantly. And if you can learn to deal with that, I think it's a huge character builder. I think that that's... You have to have some adversity in things to find your character and to value what you get out of it. If you walked up to had never drawn anything before and you picked up a pencil and you drew a masterpiece, you probably wouldn't care.
Yeah.
But if you went half mad trying to do that, to figure out how to get to that point, then there's a whole different... That's a whole different realm that opens up. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different level of pride. It's like you said, you find yourself in those moments of being tested and failing. Mm-hmm. I really think that skateboarding teaches kids something amazing because they can fall in love with something that they don't complete.
That was Jason Borgstead. He's one half of JB Deuce, a local snowboard and skateboard video that ran from the late 1990s to the early 2000s. It was funded by Borderline Alaska Snow and Skate Shop, a retail business my dad owned, and featured snowboarders and skateboarders from Alaska. Jesse Bertner was the other half of JB Deuce, and together, he and Jason filmed their own video parts for it. They also produced all 7 videos. Polar Bears, Dog Sleds, and Igloos was the first. Then came Northern Exposure, 100%, Survival of the Tightest, The 49th Chamber, In for Life, and Steezin' for No Reason. At first, the video premieres were small, projected onto a screen outside of Borderline in Diamond Center. But as they grew, so did the venues, until they were selling out the 4th Avenue Theater in downtown Anchorage. To this day, Jason and Jesse have continued to pursue their love of snowboarding and skateboarding. Jason is the owner of Blue and Gold Board Shop in Anchorage, and Jesse is the co-founder of Think Thank, a series of snowboard videos with the motto, Progression Through Creativity. Skater Micah Hollinger and snowboarder Andre Spinelli also join this conversation. Micah is one of the most celebrated skaters from Alaska. He filmed for all 7 JB Deuce videos and went on to bring a unique, creative, and artistic vision of progression to skateboarding. Andre, also known as Big Air Dre, filmed for numerous snowboard videos, including JB Deuce and Think Thank. His signature style involves hitting big jumps in the backcountry. This conversation was recorded in front of a live audience in the Anchorage Museum Auditorium on Friday, January 17th, 2025. That event was brought to you by the Northern Borders Exhibition. The exhibition celebrates snow and skate culture and community in Alaska through art. A lot of people help make this episode possible. Julie Decker, Alex Tate, Danny Crombie, and Max Kritzer at the Anchorage Museum. DJ Spencer Lee, and everyone on the panel. A quick note here about the episode. At the end of the episode, there's an audience Q&A. There, you'll hear questions from Ollie Bertner, Sharon Liska, and Les Bertner. So here they are. Jason Borgstead, Jesse Bertner, Micah Hollinger, and Andre Spinelli. Welcome to Chattermarks,
a podcast of the Anchorage Museum,
dedicated to exploring Alaska and the circumpolar north
through the creative and critical thinking of ideas,
past, present, and future.
My name is Cody Liska, and I'll be your host. What do you think it is about those borderline years that we still find intriguing all these years later? I mean, why do we keep talking about it?
Because it was at one of the most pivotal times of our lives. You know, I think most people remember those high school era times, for better or for worse, hairdos, when I had hair, all kinds of things. I mean, those are, for most of us, those are defining years that not only were memorable and cool things happen, but they're what I use as a foundation to define who I am. It's what my identity is tied to, that time period. So That's why it's pretty pivotal and important to me.
Mm-hmm. We were talking today about this because just thinking about those days, and we're talking about early 90s, kind of more mid 90s to mid 2000s-ish. Mm-hmm. Period of time. But really what it felt like for me personally is like there's all these people that would have done it alone one way or another, Super motivated, all working together on one thing, like starting with Scott and the Liska family with Borderline, the shop, and then having Jason off in his little planet. He was already becoming a pro, doing his thing, and then I was doing my thing over on the hillside. We didn't even know at the time, but Micah was doing his thing, skateboarding, and Dre was doing his thing, and everybody, even others, were swirling and creating in this space, and we all, like, coalesced on this video project and around the shop and the camp.
Form like Voltron.
Yeah, like Voltron, exactly. And by the way, like, this is at the time when snowboarding and skateboarding in general were hitting kind of the zeitgeist of counterculture in a way that America had never seen. And we were just kind of right place, right time, right people, I might say, For that.
For me personally, it was meeting up with these guys and just trying to keep up with the level they were on, because they were already established pros. So I was like, I need to get on that level and try to hang, and I think... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like having that many people push each other.
Yeah.
So you were just having, you know, having somebody say, like, let's do it, which was like the shops. I mean, G&B first, And then Borderline, and just saying, like, let's do it like they do down in the States. Mm-hmm. So let's push skateboarding, let's push snowboarding. And there was like, oh, there's this team. It's the Borderline team. So Then all of a sudden you have something to look at and be like, whoa, look at those Jake and Derek Liska in their match, or JR, I guess, In their matching outfits and their Moro boards and the Borderline team on their backs.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, what is this? Like, do I need to be in this? Like, this is the level to aspire. So just having a level to hit.
Yeah.
And then knowing, being allowed to hit a higher level, like, Like having Jason be like in a Volcom video and be like down at Mount Hood, like, and you're like, what? Like, someone from Alaska Is in a Volcom video? Like, are you kidding me? Like, oh, this is happening? Like, there's, to look, be able to look at something, first of all, is really important. Mm-hmm. To like, oh, there's the level, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think we're done.
Good talk. Thank you, everybody.
What about your first memory of going into Borderline?
Oh, my God. Scary. Kind of intimidated.
Shane? Was that guy Shane?
Well, I'm thinking back in the Arctic days, the old shop with the skate park behind it.
Yeah, Arctic and International.
Yeah, Arctic and International. And I'm going to botch his name, your uncle.
Kent.
Thank you, Kent. Yeah.
Louis hitting gyros.
Yeah. So Kent and Jay were then, I walked in, boom, some beer, some older guys. Whoa, got to level up for this. And my first conversation with Scott was like, he's like, what board you got? And I'm like, oh, I just got a, hey, guy, I just got a GNU, Dukester. He's like, oh, I have that board. Did you get it from me? I don't even have those. Like, I got it from the house. I ordered it. He's like, whack, weak. You know?
Like, oh, my God, I blew it. I blew it.
I always thought it was pretty amazing how all three Liska brothers have completely different accents. Yeah, it's pretty amazing, but they all it really lent itself to the individual personalities, you know, and I got to spend a lot of time with both Jay and Scott in the beginning, and then really honed in with Jay in the Arctic time. And then when that kind of separated, I went over and hung out with Scott a lot in the beginning of the Diamond Center, and then later on with Kent, and yeah, it was a pretty interesting privilege. I don't really remember the very first time I went into Borderline, but mm-hmm. I do remember it was early in the Arctic days. I remember being there when it first opened, mm-hmm. when the skate team was Dave Hsu and a few other guys were introduced as like, oh, this is like opening weekend of the place. Okay. This is our skate team, and they were super sick. Andy Taylor was the snowboard god of the team at that time. And
oh, yeah.
And then shortly thereafter was just a bunch of consecutive events of me coming in asking, how do I get sponsored?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Hey, Jay, can I get on the team? He's like, well, do you do any contests? You got to do contests. And I was like, no, I'll go do contests. And then, but I want to do video parts.
Yeah.
And he's like, you don't get to do that. You got to win contests, and then you get to go do video parts. And, yeah, I mean, Jay was just, for a little reference, Jay was our first real outwardly noticed professional in Alaska. And so mm-hmm. it was pretty formidable for me to get to spend some time under his wing, just a normal guy, but was ripping, was in snowboard videos. And
yeah, I mean, the double bump switch triple poke indie is yeah. still NBD.
Yeah.
I mean, that Project 6 video part with Jay and Richie is
yeah.
absolutely legendary.
No, Richie! No, Richie, no! But yeah, there was a lot of events like that that were really pretty awesome in those beginning times. But yeah. I have a hard time.
I saw Jason at the trampoline.
Yep.
I was going to say, yeah, the trampoline contest.
Yeah.
Controversy ensued.
They didn't know I was hiding out up in Glen Alps inside of a gymnasium my dad had built, his four boys, with a 16-foot-tall ceiling. Is that right, Dad? 16-foot-tall ceiling that we learned to play basketball in, but then we got a full-size trampoline, and I was just in there just training.
Yeah.
Secret weapon from the hillside.
For the contest?
Just for snowboarding. Like I was like, oh, I could strap in on this and do it?
Here's the funny part of that contest. So never has anybody taken a trampoline contest more serious than Jesse. But we were also training, and at the same time, out of one side of my mouth, I was saying, like, what's this guy doing? He's over here complaining about the judging. The other side, I was like, what do you mean Jake Liska beat me? That's because his dad owns the place.
Wait, was it on a skateboard or a snowboard?
Snowboard. Yeah. We did some skating for fun, but it was a strap into a snowboard, fall time.
And
Mistral sponsored it.
Yeah,
and they
had the
Jimmy Halipoff and Randy Walters were there, and these were pros at the time. And I mean, think about that for like a second. Is like
mm-hmm.
this event, you just are figuring out what snowboarding is, and you just go down, and it's packed. There's 200 people in this parking lot.
There were a lot of people there.
Yeah,
a lot of people.
And these pros are sitting at a fold-out table, ready to judge your little routine on a trampoline. You duct tape your edges.
No.
And you just start unleashing the backside 720 tailfish you've been working on.
That was it? The heater was a 720?
I think I did like a 900 somehow. Like,
really? That's impressive.
On a trampoline you did?
Yeah.
Wow.
Did anyone go upside down?
Not me, but I don't think so. But Jason,
I don't think
it was fun, but... Were you at those, Dre?
New. This is all before my time.
Yeah. Oh, Young Buck.
You know, what do you think about all this nostalgia surrounding Borderline? Do you think it helps the local scene, or do you think it hinders it in some way?
That's a good question.
I think it can't hinder it. It helps, you know? It's like, I feel like as a community, we were so together during those days. Mm-hmm. And at camp, I mean, it bottles the mind. I believe they say
it bottles it.
Bottle? It bottles
That's
it.
That's what Bogart would have said.
But you know, like, and it's gonna come back around. Like everyone sort of spread out, but everyone. I mean, it's like I feel like we're back almost at camp right now. Mm-hmm. Like with this group here, and it's like,
yeah,
it's gonna come back around. Like you know, like and Jason's doing it with Blue and Gold, and it's like the energy's still there. A lot has changed. Information. The way we take in information, like talking about how we know every line from Project Six, a snowboard movie that came out in 1993 or whatever. That's we're inundated with snowboard imagery now as snowboarders fed straight to our brains. Mm-hmm. It's different now. Everything's different, but that's not to say that like community still isn't coalescing.
Yeah, the difficult part now is that when people have nostalgia for that time, processing that into not holding to the same level or expectation currently, but more so adapting it to the current landscape. Mm-hmm. I've always held that I'm not going to be able to replicate those days, but I can take the values and the principles that we had from that time and try to apply them currently, and hopefully that takes. Hopefully that influences the next group to say, yeah, it is rad to get together with a bunch of people and share things in person and experience that with another person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What comes to mind when you think back on the video premieres? Is it your part? Is it someone else's part? Is it the crowd? Is it a specific story?
It was just kind of like a big party every time, seems like. Like we'd roll up in like a motorhome or
the motorhome to Fourth Avenue, definitely like the climax of premieres.
That Fourth Avenue one was crazy.
Yeah, it was like a whole year of hard work, and tonight we're gonna celebrate that and just party or whatever if that's what you're into.
Did Josh Boots perform at that one?
Yeah,
yeah, pretty heavy.
It was pretty magical and impactful because you're not only showing off your stuff, you're not only showing off this video you made, but you know that you're making an impact on people like Micah and Dre who put in hard work, and it's our responsibility to try to portray them the best we can and give them this platform to blossom on. And so it was an indescribable amount of happiness and joy and pride that all came from those nights. I mean, some of the best nights of my life. Yeah. And I didn't have a letdown afterwards. There was no depression point afterwards. It was just magnificent to come together as a group, to come together as a team with Jesse and I, with all the riders, and in essence this community, and to have that. That's when the star bursts, you know. It just comes out in that one night, in that time period there, and then I guess we never really had the depression afterwards because, like, the day later, it was like, oh, let's meet up and talk about what's going to happen next year, and you start working.
No downtime. The next day, start filming for the next video. You put it down. The video's done. Put it down. Let's move on. Next video. Every single time.
I think another thing to add to that is that the hometown crowd for the hometown video was about as hype as any premiere I've ever seen. So it was like the hypest premiere.
Especially in a state like Alaska where people have so much pride for being Alaskans. Yeah, yeah. And then also they feel so overlooked by the lower 48 and the larger culture conversation. So like to have their own thing.
And
we would put tons of homies in. So like you might be in there and like your one homie gets, you get one clip, your name pops on screen. Everyone always got their name on screen. It was like the whole crew's like, ah!
It was special.
Yeah.
You guys were pretty secretive back then too. Like, I mean, maybe still, but like things were very secretive. Like,
yeah,
once you were on the inside, you were not allowed to talk about it.
We would go into like a cave for sure. We'd go into, you know, blackout like mode. And I hate editing with people over my shoulder. Just absolute hate it. So like if you're gonna come and try to like, what you working on? I'm just like frozen, you know, just like I'm not working on anything now.
Another thing about filming was for me it was it felt like more productive. Like I love snowboarding, love being in the mountains, love doing all that stuff, but then you can only play hooky so much. But then once I started working on the videos, I felt like I was actually doing something. So I really had an excuse to be doing what I wanted to do. Yeah. And so that was pretty, I think that was a pretty sweet part of it.
Yeah, you can only miss your mom's birthday so many times.
Yeah.
You got to be doing like a 140-foot front nine to miss her birthday.
Sorry, Mom, but I got this clip today.
Yeah. I showed up after.
That's a story for Dre's Ender and Steezin' for no reason.
Well, that's real.
Yeah. He was like Mom's birthday. He was up snowmobiling with the twins and like got like the biggest front nine ever at that point in snowboarding.
No way.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom. March 26th.
Yeah, March 26th.
It's tattooed on my lower back. I never forget it. Is that productivity? Is that what helped you feel justified in utilizing certain churches and places like that in the middle of the winter that you may not have been a parishioner of?
I wanted to ask Micah about stories about what they had to do to keep skating through the winter.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk to my lawyer before I speak. But, yeah, we used to break into, like, schools and stuff. Museums, maybe? No, we did what we had to do to skate, like, no matter what, when we were kids, you know? Like, if you're not old enough to, like, fly around the country on your own, 15 years old, and we just break into school and skate at night. There's no alarms back then, I guess.
or a church.
I don't know if I was involved.
Certain Latter-day Saint church.
I don't know if I was on that mission.
There's a specific clip in the video.
Certain Switch 360 flip.
Yeah, switch no tray idea. Flip off of the stage, much like this.
No, but like that's really the most miraculous thing, I think, from my time doing this is like what Micah and Adrian and Jerry and Anthony and the whole crew was able to do skateboarding, because we're in Alaska. It's like it's snowy. There's mountains. Snowboarding is like the thing to do, you know, like but it's more downstream that we created a vibrant snowboard scene. But the skateboarding was like a complete uphill battle.
Yeah, what place where they spread gravel over everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
We spread gravel on our skatable surfaces.
Yeah. It's not good for skateboarding.
No, yet. It's like the worst thing you could choose to pursue in the last.
Yeah.
Like, why?
Yeah. But that was what Micah did, and he did that for the whole video too, was when he came into the mix, he was looking at movies like Toy Machine or the pro movies, and instead of being like, I want to get near there, he was like, that's the level. I got to get there. Mm-hmm. And he said his bar's so high that the snowboarders were like, okay, we got to like he's going all the way. Like, he's going to go all the way to the top of this sport. Like, he's going to be as good as the best. Mm-hmm. Like, we got to be as good as or better than the best, you know?
I think one theme that goes throughout is that nobody in this group saw themselves as limited. And that's what you're saying. You know, he didn't see the limits of, they didn't find excuses for themselves to be mediocre. And that's why you saw certain people. And if you did, you kind of fell off pretty quick. Mm-hmm. That's what separated the different levels. And that's why you saw certain people go up to do big things. You know, especially in the skateboarding side, for you to decide, I'm not going to snowboard during the winter. Mm-hmm. I'm going to skate. I'm going to see it through. And then I'm going to not accept that I'm going to do less because I'm up here and have these hurdles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
You're kind of a big deal.
It's like I love Adrian's intro with the truck.
It's just kind of hard.
Yeah. It's like the best summation of Alaskan skateboarding.
What do you say? It's kind of cold out here. It's super
trucks
cold.
Are breaking. Trucks are breaking. Wheels are breaking.
You're breaking.
Yeah. It's just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, Micah. So I was listening to the Crude interview we did back in 2020, and you said that at a certain point, you got sick of doing standard skate tricks, and that's when you kind of gravitated toward doing non-traditional skate stuff like one-footers. Mm-hmm. What did that transformation look like? Was it all at once? Like you just showed up to the skate park the next day trying all these techie tricks? Or was it kind of bit by bit?
That's a tough question to answer. Yeah, I was just sick of how skateboarding looked. It looked so cookie cutter to me. And for a while, I was trying to do the biggest obstacle. Like, I'd go to any city in the country and go, what's the biggest thing I can go down on my skateboard?
Mm.
And after a while, it hurts, first of all. And yeah. After a while, it's just boring. Like, another 30-stair rail, 40-stair. Like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I need to create something that looks different to me, that I care about, that's fun and interesting, that maybe doesn't even look like skateboarding to most people. So then I just started going with that. And then I feel like a few years into that, meeting up with Jesse and Gus Engel, and then we really started getting weird. If you want to elaborate.
I think it was always there, though. Like, yeah. You always had, like, a je ne sais quoi about your skateboarding that was there, and I think you just started listening to it more.
Maybe, yeah.
And, like, treating it with respect and being like, I'm going to listen to it. Because you were always, yeah, you were, like, the first person that told me kind of how to edit something based on, like, you were like, I just never forget, you're like, wait till my buttery steez comes out. Like, I cut this clip, and you're like, no, wait till my buttery steez comes out. It comes out right here.
Yeah.
And it made me drag it longer, and it was like, there's the buttery steez. And I just think you were thinking.
Angel Williams was a strong proponent of the buttery steez as well.
Yeah.
You were thinking on that level, like, from the beginning. I don't know. I just think, like, well, I'm a big fan.
He was doing, yeah, he was working up, because one of the coolest things was you would see the sickest current type trick, kickflip back nose blunt at Ben Boeke on the box, mm-hmm. and you're like, mm-hmm. And then you would see the 1 foot front board on mm-hmm. the rail later on in that day. So you were seeing him transition, but you knew he could do whatever he wanted on a skateboard, and then it started to be like, oh, hey, I'm not going to just do what these guys are doing, but I'm going to forge my own path, and that's all based on that, the passion and the skill put together mm-hmm. With some creativity mixed in.
Well, don't you think that, I mean, skating during that time was, they were becoming like robots, and they were breaking themselves off, like destroying themselves. Mm-hmm. Probably a little bit of survival mode, and you tapped into other talents you had.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know if I want to do that forever.
And it was like there with like the circle too, like just being able to take like a normal thing and make it extraordinary. And that was like a big thing for Think Tank, and like the ethos of that, that you created like in your cul-de-sac there with the circle, how you would like, you laid wood down on your stairs and had like some ollie, like you were using the roof of your house. You guys were like going crazy.
Oh, yeah, like
at
jumping
the
out
circle.
The window stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you, yeah, like Belky would jump off the roof, land on the grass, roll, run up, jump on the skateboard, hit the box.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole thing was part of the clip. At that point, it was
second
like,
second story.
Roof. What happened on the box only mattered. And then all of a sudden, they're like, no, the skateboard's not even involved for most of this clip. And then it gets involved. It's like, wait, what?
He invented parkour, I think.
Yeah. It's like, it was just like,
shout
you know,
to
like
Belky.
When you take a little, it expands the universe a little bit. You're like, oh, man. Like, you would pop off your skateboard and run sometimes in a line. Mm-hmm. And no one was doing that. And it was like so amazingly like mind expanding for me personally. It'd be like, oh, my God, I love that. I love that he pops up and runs and then gets back on the board. Like, I don't know. Yeah.
And that's when Bertner stopped strapping in.
No, for real, though. For real. For real, for real. That
I wasn't joking.
Yeah, not joking at all. I mean, Micah was the total spirit animal for that entire
journey that's ongoing now gave me permission to also look at the creative side of me, and I was very much on survival mode because I had hit my head and, you know, had a traumatic brain injury and had to really think about how I was going to continue inside this sport that I loved more than anything, but also had very almost nearly ended my life. So it was like, you know, like Micah really gave me that, you know, opportunity. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah,
with buttery stees.
I don't have the buttery stees. That
I beg
you
to
can't
differ.
Just do that. You got to be born with that.
Bertner, when it comes to your vision for Think Tank, you've always wanted to make movies that are philosophical. I've heard you reference directors like Stanley Kubrick, Alfred Hitchcock. I think it actually is pretty interesting to explore human philosophy through snowboarding. I've never, outside of like you, I haven't really ever heard that. And I guess maybe this question is for everybody. Yeah, what do you think you guys have learned through snowboarding and skateboarding? And maybe Bertner, I mean, like philosophically, because that's where you kind of exist.
Yeah, I mean, man, you learn everything. Everything is contained in everything in the world. But you learn so much about yourself from snowboarding, from pursuing anything you love with passion. You learn so much about yourself. You want to meet yourself, try a really difficult trick a million times.
Yeah.
You will meet the true you. Yeah, and you will, you when you get in that moment, like a true battle, and you're face to face with yourself, it's pretty beautiful and powerful. Just to strip everything away, strip ego away, and just be in this like weird moment. It's like transcendental, I think. Like,
it's insane, yeah.
Yeah.
Your colors come out.
Yeah.
I was filming a trick last year and I was crying. And
really?
I messed up. Where's Ollie at? He was there. It's embarrassing. But I'm crying and like a tear falls in my eye while I'm trying to trick, messed me up during the trick. Remember that? You filmed it.
Yeah. I don't.
But really, it tears you apart from the inside and it teaches you humility and patience, right? I'm more than anything, I think, how to fail.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, how to fail.
I think snowboarding and skateboarding, almost everything that I've learned came from that or can be rooted in that. But it's like these guys said, it's. I think the key is finding something that you fail at. And there's really not much that maybe every sport person says this, but skateboarding, snowboarding, we chose this pursuit or fell in love with this pursuit of something that you fail at constantly. And if you can learn to deal with that, I think it's a huge character builder. I think that that's... you have to have some adversity in things to find your character and to value what you get out of it. If you walked up to a, had never drawn anything before and you picked up a pencil and you drew a masterpiece, you probably wouldn't care.
Yeah.
But if you went half mad trying to do that, to figure out how to get to that point, then there's a whole different... That's a whole different realm that opens up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different level of pride. It's you, like you said, you find yourself in those moments of being tested and failing.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that skateboarding teaches kids something amazing because they can fall in love with something that they don't complete. You know, there's not very many things in life that you can fail at all day long and still be super psyched about.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch other people succeed at it almost seemingly effortlessly, and then you fail all day long and you're still pumped to go do that again with your friends. And you know, those are that's something magical, and that vehicle that we fell in love with has taught me a lot of things about life, and that failure is what I think is at the root of most things you learn.
And you it's like you get addicted to the feeling of being alive on that level, like where you're just like, whoa, that's life.
Yeah.
Like life just hit me in the face, like literally. Like when you slam, you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Oh, check. All systems check. I am alive. I didn't really know I was alive all week working, staring at my computer, looking at my phone.
Yeah.
You know, like going about my business, but now I'm definitely sure I'm alive. You know, I just caught my edge and.
Yeah.
And right. I'm better for it. Like, let's go. You know, I'm ready now.
Dre, I have another snowboard question for you. So you were in Thunk and Cue the Birds, which were both Think Tank videos. What was it like being in a video like Think Tank where so much of it revolved around smaller technical stuff? Did you ever feel out of place at all?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there would definitely be times when I was less into what we were working on, but I was able to kind of adapt. I was just happy to be out there.
Medium air, Dre. Yeah.
Well, those two movies in particular, working. We were still kind of chasing the big dogs and trying to chuck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't really until Patchwork that Dre, like once we started doing more mini shred, he would just air over everything we were doing. You know, like he would just be like, "Oh, okay." He was great at it. He would be like, "Oh, okay, you guys are going to do like a little triple line here. I'll Miller flip over all that and drag my hand on that tip, you know?" And like, it was like sick. You know, that was just kind of the thing, was like everybody just to find the way to express yourself inside snowboarding. Mm-hmm. It didn't have to be my way. It was better if it wasn't, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was like whichever way made sense to you, like interpret the feature, interpret the day to fit your style of snowboarding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we started getting that like in the tin can trees and stuff too, where we would be spread out, like rather than just everyone on one jump, it was like we were spread out and so-and-so's hitting this and doing that.
Yeah, and like Dre and Geno, and they were like the extra block crew. Like they would just be like, get done with a jump and then be like, another block, like another layer. Like their jumps would just go up, 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 up. So yeah, that was an exclusive crew.
Not a lot of 1 foot going off those jumps.
Yeah, that was where the TheraFlu jump came from.
Oh,
the extra block.
Put that
crew
on the screen right now.
Yeah. But nowadays it's different up at Tin Can, right? Not as many booters getting built.
There was a couple booters getting built up there pre-season this year. Back when we had snow in November.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen any big ones.
Yeah.
I've seen a few little kids or skier ran groups building something to backflip onto the flat, and then that's all I've really seen. I don't know if it's going down or not. A lot of split boarding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think now's a good time to open up questions to the audience. If anybody has any questions, there's a microphone right here in the front. And you can come ask the question right there.
Ollie?
Microphone in the front, Ollie.
Come up to the front, Ollie.
You got our first question? Yep.
Here we go.
I just wanted to ask, what would you say is the best snowboard or skateboard trick that you've ever done?
To who, Dre?
Anybody. Everybody.
TheraFlu.
That's Dre, back rodeo, off an incredible jump from Patchwork Patterns. That's the best thing I've ever filmed.
Over a tree with a one-liner. That's why it's so good.
Yeah. He drops a one-liner. He said, you better get some TheraFlu. Because this is about to be sick.
Or break out the TheraFlu. Is it breakout?
Break out the TheraFlu.
Break out the TheraFlu. This is about to be sick. And then
amazing.
He drops in and just hits this jump that no one else could hit. I like went off this jump, did a melancholy, was just chilling, and then ended up doing half a front flip for no reason. After I did my melancholy, I was just like, okay, I'm hitting the jump, everything's working. And then I was like, wait, what's happening?
That's
Dre
funny.
Goes just back rodeo, right over this like 20-foot tall, perfectly straight tree, out of the one-liner. That was a miracle.
Didn't he hit the tree? Didn't he
incredible.
Hit the tree too?
Yeah, the little tap.
Little
tap, tap, taparoo.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to hear what Jason thought. I would almost say the nice Gordon Ender was got to be up there because it's at Arctic Valley. Yeah. No one had hit that jump.
Yeah, what he's talking about is the last, is that maybe the last trick I ever really filmed, or the last trick of me on video, really. I mean, we did those other videos recently. So, Arctic Valley has always held a special place for me. I grew up in Eagle River, and Arctic Valley was the place that was close enough we could hitchhike rides to, get dropped off at the bottom, and we could afford to go there frequently, and it didn't have a lot, but we made what we could out of it. I would say it was a lift access version of what you were hiking over by your house, kind of.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that between the two of us, of just trying to make something out of not much there. And to come full circle 20 some years later, at the end of Nice Gordon, I found a kind of a cornice. It drops down and there's a wind lip and to gap from that. And I went up and there was nobody to hit it with me. I built this jump, salted it, and said, hey, point the camera, please. And did a back seven over it. And yeah, that was probably one of the bigger jumps I've ever hit. It's pretty special because it was Arctic Valley and because it was a solo mission. That's a little strange usually. Usually you're not hitting a big jump just by yourself.
You set up a tripod?
No. Andy Halverson filmed, Gary Milton filmed, and Alex Mertz took photos.
Okay.
Was more media than riders.
You were riding a solo. Yeah.
Was that up under Gordon Lyon? Is that where that was?
I think so. It's whatever that gut you would go up to and on your right, when you're going uphill on your right hand side, there's that little island that comes out.
Yeah.
Maestro, favorite trick you've ever done?
It's hard to say. Because
of the pronunciation?
I could probably say that one you filmed, actually, Borg.
We're talking about Reno.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the bigger things I've
done,
I guess. Yeah. That comes to mind.
University, Reno, Nevada?
Like a 40 or 50 stair, maybe?
Yeah, let me let them know how it went. So UNR... Oh, wait, you tell the lead up, because you went a few times, right?
I went a few times, yeah.
With different people.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
The film. What were you doing in Reno?
Meeting up with you. So I lived in Truckee at the time. Micah was rolling through. He said he wanted to do this thing, or I can't remember exactly how it went down, but
yeah.
I said, do you want to film some stuff? Yeah, I want to do this. Cool, let's film. I don't know if Gary filmed or not, but I know we set up one as a still, and then I did a follow-in angle of this. But the cool thing was this was a theme of mine. Find a holiday that people are busy and go film the bust spots on those days.
Oh, yes.
And this was the Super Bowl Sunday. So everybody was out and about. It's a big football college, so everybody's in their houses or in places doing that. Afterwards, Micah lands this nose slide that he had tried a few times, and we're talking like
how many
20
stairs?
Some stairs flat, 20 some stairs.
Looked like 100.
It's a monster.
It was a lot.
It's a humongous,
complete monster.
Yeah, did it with six that super high to get onto. He laces
nipple
this thing.
High.
What
like. Chest high.
Yeah. Bogart did it on a snowboard.
So?
Switch.
That's a whole discussion itself.
Back to me.
Yeah, if you're going to compare doing something on a snowboard and a skateboard, pretty much skateboarding wins.
Sharon. All right.
My question is, you guys talked a little bit about... how J.B. Deuce and how the movies and the filming and everything, if it had changed the trajectory of your careers and what you guys decided to do and where your careers went to. And from, my side of things, I saw a lot from the background, right? And from behind the scenes, keeping things running and all of this. And I love hearing your stories. Because I didn't participate on the side that you guys did, but I'm so very proud to see where you guys have gone. That being said, I couldn't help but wonder, what if there had never been a borderline? What if the Liska boys had never poured their hearts and souls into this community of skating and snowboarding? What if there had never been a summer camp? How would that have changed the trajectory of your lives?
That's hard to say, because borderline was such a big component in what we did, but we were all so absolutely motivated and starved to make it that we were going to figure out a way no matter what. But Scott and borderline and you know, the whole family definitely helped make it a lot easier.
I think it might have come together. Not have been an Alaskan story.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would have been, there would have been other stories that wouldn't have maybe had as much impact, and it probably wouldn't have been a uniquely Alaskan story because we would have had to leave to make an impact.
Yeah.
And we all wanted to make an impact, and like everyone was motivated, like Mike is saying, but doing it here might not have, wouldn't have been on the table, you know? And like, I mean, the commitment that Borderline made to our video was staggering. Like,
yeah.
I mean, at that point, to have a $10,000 check written.
Which I don't remember that amount.
It's so, $1 million in today's money.
Yeah.
That was the first or the second movie or something. There was like to make all the copies and to have the editing done and the time and everything. It was a big, that's a big chunk of money now to put behind any project in snowboarding. And so Scott and Sharon saw Scott was definitely a risk taker. But they saw this marketing opportunity and saw it, you know, they felt the energy and were like, oh, what if we could have this energy that Roadkill has, that Fall Line Films has, that, you know, MacDog has? What if we could own some of that energy, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think Jason and I popped up and like, yep, here you go, guys. Like, make it happen, you know? And it's like, whoa, holy moly.
That's
you
weird
trust to, us to do that? Like, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's weird to think about, though. Like, if there were no borderline. Like,
Yeah.
I can't imagine anyone that would have stepped up and filled that void. Like,
no.
I just can't even. I'm racking my brain, and I don't think it would have been pretty sad.
Probably no blue and gold.
Somebody would have stepped up and done something, but it would have been much different.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, obviously it's a very unique family with a unique perspective. But I think it takes those type of people to say, I'm going to risk all of this. I'm going to do something non-ordinary, non-traditional. And I mean, those guys, if I remember the story right, you know, they cashed in a lot of what they had put into 401ks and whatnot as electricians. I mean, it started because Jay Liska was already in love with snowboarding. He was already there, and then those guys came up with this idea together, let's start a shop. So there were people that were going to do it regardless. I had started snowboarding before Borderline opened, but I don't know what the platform would have been, but I credit that time period with giving me a community to belong to, to feel open and free enough to be confident, to be who I needed to be, to go as far as I could go.
Same, yeah.
And that was what I did and try and continue to try to provide for others. I don't know if I would have... I can't even imagine it, because it's just not fathomable what would have... That's what it was. It was that group, and we will have no other idea what anything else could have been. We can see now that when I'm doing it and when Jake and Derek are doing it, it's not the same. Mm. Even the same family can't reproduce it because time has changed. People have changed. The delivery method for everything we're doing changes. Again, we can only try to continue to reproduce the values and the beautiful things that we got from that and try to pass those on and instill those in the next group. I don't know, but I'm grateful that it was those guys, and I will forever be grateful that that those are the guys that I get to proudly say I learned under, I got to be around, I got to try to get a piece of pizza from before it cooled off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jay would buy him pizza, but he would not let it cool down. And he'd say, "You can have some if you eat it while it's, you know, with it's hot." And Jay could finish the pizza by himself if I didn't get a piece.
So. You want to use the mic, Dad?
But that being said, support your local skate shops, guys. It's important.
Yeah, get very important. Get off your Amazon accounts. Come on.
Yeah.
In the early years in the Bertner household, there was a snowboard called Big Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
What is your take on how that fits into the story of snowboarding?
So that was Dennis and Kathy Sayer, and Kathy was a DJ at K-Whale. And they started a snowboard company, and for me, they were really big because I rode for them, and they said they would send me to amateur nationals if I rode for them in Minnesota, and that's why I signed on. And they sent me, and that really launched my career because I won that contest and was able to really, that was really a big pivotal one for me. And that was an operation run right out of here at Anchorage. The boards, though, were made actually in Minnesota at that point, and then they switched to a Washington State manufacturing. But Kathy is Native Alaskan, and she worked with Native Alaskan artists. And I remember a time when we had a whale kind of art on the board, and she was like, "Look, people use this stuff all the time, but they don't know what they're doing. This is approved, and we have got permission to use this from the tribe and the artist, and it's okay to put this on a board." And I was like, I didn't even understand what she was talking about, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because no one was talking about that back then, and it's just really cool to, I was like, I had never thought of that. You know, like, oh, it's like a language. You can't just throw whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Anywhere you want it, you know, this is a people's language and history, and you have to do it in the right way. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's just a little anecdote from that time, but it was a funny Anchorage snowboard company, and a few of us were sponsored by them.
Who else?
There's one at Play It Again Sports, if you want one right now.
No way.
There is, yeah.
What do you mean?
Go get it.
There's a big Alaska board over there.
Like for sale?
Yeah.
Let's go
from back in the day.
From back in the day.
Let's go tomorrow.
I still have one.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. And
so are we talking Huffman or Spinard?
Spinard. Riveting radio for the podcast. Yeah. Listeners.
I'm going to cut that out.
We'll see if they get out there and get that fine by the time this releases.
That's cool. Well, who else was on that company?
Aaron Greeno, Robbie Gonzalez.
Chris Bombeck.
Bomber. Mm-hmm.
Bomber.
Bombeck. It was Bombeck and the Bomber and the Jester were the two mainstays.
I remember that poster.
That was the pro team, or as close to pro as you were going to do
that
team.
Was the poster,
we had a really unfortunate poster.
No way.
Just this huge Tina method cranked all the way back, and it said, "The Jester" above me, and I was like, never had been known as the Jester.
They just coined it.
But Will, ever since then.
They didn't get permission to use that language.
Yeah, they didn't get permission to use the Jester.
Yeah. Love that.
I just showed up to Gary King, and there was this poster I was supposed to sign that said the Jester. And then that's the amazing. Bomber beside me. But yeah, super funny.
I like that.
All right, guys. Those are all the questions I have for you. I want to thank Borgstead, Bertner, Micah, Dre for being here. The audience for being here. Everyone at the Anchorage Museum for making tonight possible. Julie Decker for her vision of what a museum can be. Alex Tate for your work on the Northern Borders exhibition, and Danny Crombie for helping set tonight up. And of course, everyone in the Alaska snow and skate scene right now. Woo. Carrying the torch.
You.
Thank you. Woo. Cody.
Thank you, guys.
For more information about the Anchorage Museum, visit anchoragemuseum.org. This podcast was produced by me, Cody Liska, for the Anchorage Museum, with additional help from Julie Decker. Chattermark's music is produced by Keys Open Doors.
Thanks for joining us today for Addressing Alaskans. We just heard an episode of the Anchorage Museum's Chattermarks podcast. You can find Addressing Alaskans on our website, alaskapublic.org, the Alaska Public Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ammon Swenson. Thanks for listening.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.